Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are surviving this pneumonia. So I was diagnosed with pneumonia last Friday or Thursday, whenever, and they gave me some medication. And apparently it's really not bacterial. Therefore, I really have to take care of myself and get my immune system boosted up to fighting this before I have to go to the hospital, I guess. So anyway, if I'm coughing, then you will kind of understand, and I will try to do everything I can to shield you from the contagions that I may be carrying. Anyway, we're trying to create that stage of the footings so that you understand how we ended up into this position with the government and the Constitution the way it is. There's no doubt in my mind that the government that was created in 1787 that established this hybrid constitutional republic. So I'm going to go on a tangent real quick. When Benjamin Franklin told, and I actually knew the lady, I'm bad with names, and I believe it's in my first book, when he answered the question, it's a republic if you can keep it, he didn't place context to the type of republic. Just so you understand, there are two types of republics. Because you have to understand that republics are representative governments. And so there are two types of representative governments that fall under a republic. A confederacy, which is where the states provide just some basic administrative capabilities to representing the independent states, which is what the Articles of Confederation did. Then you have the Federation, which is where you create a central all-powerful. In other words, you delegate almost all power to the Federation. Now, one of the things that they kind of threw people off, or I think some people alluded to this concept of this federal government, that the federal government was, in essence, the Federation. And it wasn't. As a matter of fact, the framers referred to that federal government as the general government, just like they called the Continental Congress was the general government before. They didn't necessarily refer to the general government in context to a federation, because they clearly laid out very limited powers for that federation. So technically, we have this hybrid constitutional republic. We do have a federation, but that federation is limited and defined by the enumerated powers. So they don't have control over everything, which is why we're in this mess that we're in, because they've convinced us that they can do anything and everything that they want to do, which is contrary to how they were defined during the ratification debates. There was nowhere where it was ever mentioned, oh, the federal government be able to do anything, and they'll assume any powers necessary to keep us going and to do good things for us. You have to understand that the states were very jealous. They were very guarded. They wanted to be able to have the ultimate say over anything not delegated, which means that they have kind of failed. But actually what's happened is over time, they have convinced the states that they can do this, they can do this, and that they can do more. And in so doing, they use this little, I'll just call it a little tool or a vice in getting the states to accept these unconstitutional positions. And the, that little vice or that tool was money. They used the public purse to basically buy off what we would call these powers that the federal government was creating. Now, some of them in the very beginning seemed kind of, that's okay. I think that's a natural thing. We'll let you do that. But the problem is that they never followed the amendment process. Why? Why is the amendment process so important? The amendment process is the formal process of making a change to delegate power, making a change to the Constitution in delegating power to the general government over the specific thing that they need to have power to. If not, it's something that they put on the wall that they have no authority to act. It's like all these, you know, if you look at every power that they've created unconstitutionally, it's like this little wish sheet. I wish we could do this, boom. And they put it on the wall and they start doing it. And so what they have, and this is why I call our general government is literally a house of cards. They have no authority whatsoever to be able to assume any of these powers. And I'm just here to tell you that they are creating such a mess that if we don't step in and reel this back in before it's too late, I want you to know something, friends. We don't have a real debt problem. We have a constitutional problem. When government is spending money that is unauthorized for them to do, they do not have the power to spend money on education. They do not have the constitutional power to spend money on agriculture or, you know, and taking all of this debt from all of these other nations, that is all fraud. They don't have the authority, and the only way they can get that authority, as George Washington said, is by the mode in the Constitution. Madison pointed this out with the bonus bill. And as a matter of fact, Mr. Andrew, if you're listening, I will send you those emails regarding the vetoes of the transportation bills. Forgive me, I know I owe you that. Anyway, so what are we talking about here? What we're talking about is the fact that just because the federal government or the general government has put these little wish plates up on their wall and started stacking them and building upon them, they've created these wings of government, these, you know, monolithic powers, all unconstitutionally. You have to understand, my friends, the only way they have the authority to do something is via an amendment. Here's a case in point. And I just want you to be really clear on understanding how this is so limited. The federal government cannot create an act and then assume power. What I mean by that is, and I'll give you a good example, the ADA, the American Disability Act. If it is not an enumerated power in the Constitution, they have no business meddling with it. That's what George Nicholas stated. As a matter of fact, John Marshall also stated this. That's why we go through the ratification debates. And as you understand and as you can cite these things out of the ratification debates, you are citing terms and definitions of the compact. Because these were the words that were accepted by the states to say, yes, we are ratifying this based on how this is being presented. We accept your definitions and how you've explained these mystical clauses and how you've explained how well done this Constitution Republic has been. And therefore, in so doing, my friends, they have created a huge mess that requires us, the people of the disparate states, to step in and do the job a parent has to do. I mean, does a parent, you know, when they walk in and they see that the children have, you know, really made a mess of things and they, you know, there's food everywhere. I mean, it's just disgusting. You have to clean it up. a good parent doesn't just let that stand and let, you know, germs start infesting and let, you know, disease start, you know, happening. We have to clean this up. And I'm telling you, friends, if we don't clean this up quickly, and we can do this, and we can do it rather quickly, a lot faster than you think. This is why I beg and plead people to start putting money aside so that you can help us win the elections necessary in Wyoming and hopefully South Dakota and hopefully a couple more states. You know, it would be a good thing that if I had to come to you and ask you to contribute, you know, $400, $100 to each of these different causes in these different states. Why? Because if we get, you have to realize this is how we can do this. If you believe in contributing political money in a blue state, you're throwing good money after bad because you've got rhino problems. There's no footing there. You can't save your state, and we don't have the time to save your state. But we already have grown significantly in Wyoming. We're growing in South Dakota. We plan on growing in South Dakota. We plan on growing in a few other dark red states. This is why we need to start funneling money to those key candidates who are willing to actually take a stand on the Constitution. I can tell you, you may have somebody in your state. You could have somebody in California. You could have several people in California willing to take a stand, but there's no way they would be lost in the sea of corruption and communism. Let me cut myself short here real quick, and we will be right back after these two promos, getting back into the monologue. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so what we're trying to do is we're trying to kind of give you this, you know, what we're trying to do here. I'm trying to kind of give you this overview, this macro view of why this long connecting the dots, setting the stage is so important. This way you understand that it doesn't matter if it's the debt. It doesn't matter if it's this power, if it's the corporations. It doesn't matter what the general government is doing and what they have done. All are unconstitutional. All is unconstitutional. Anyway, forgive me. All of these things are unconstitutional unless there is an Article 5 amendment where the states have delegated this authority to the general government. Then they are in breach of the compact. So what do we do? This is where Madison steps up and says exactly what is necessary to do in going down this path of holding the subcontractor, the general government, accountable. The states must convene in a court, in a tribunal, together, not independently, not in nullifying. Be very, very clear. Only the states have the ability to coalesce and judge together, like parents, what to do with this child. Because the general government is the child. The parents are the states. And if you can get that, if you understand that one paradigm, that one metaphorical, image there, parent, states, there you go, the child, general government, voila, we've done it. One of the things I also need to do before I really go too much further into the monologue, because I tried to do this in the very first section, you need to know that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this is really the only show that goes through the academic, and it may be repetitive, and maybe you're starting to get this and you've listened long enough to where you're probably able to start duplicating some of this stuff. So here's my question for you. Why aren't you? Why aren't you going out and having these same diatribes, have these, engage in conversation with groups of people, bringing them to the table? Now, what do you say? What table? Where's the organization? Join up with the NLA, National Liberty Alliance. The National Liberty Alliance, as of last week, is 100% on board with doing whatever we can do in moving Republic Review. So if you're looking for an organization for education and so forth, there you go. I believe that we're at the cusp of actually pulling in the Constitution Party. I cannot fathom that the Constitution Party is anything other than supportive of enforcing the Constitution. Do not let any soothsayer, any nefarious person tell you that Republic Review is dangerous. This is exactly, I have the evidence. No one can actually dispute the evidence and the information. All they're doing is they're trying to use ad hominem reports or ad hominem attacks and positions. Oh, well, GR in his very first book. Yeah, the process was definitely not galvanized and it wasn't matured. It took a little while. And thankfully, it took the help of a lot of the naysayer groups. But it's more than a naysayer group when they just challenge you. But when you've actually refuted all of their arguments and they still stay in the naysayer camp, you can't consider them just a naysayer group. They're acting as a controlled opposition group because they refuse to get on board. And this isn't on board with me. This is getting on board with enforcing the Constitution. I'm not asking you to join, send me money. I mean, I do need money, and I'm hoping that I can get the financing that is necessary so we can do many of the things we need to do. And so I'm just asking that you start consecrating your time and effort to this worthy cause of getting people to acknowledge we must enforce our Constitution. Oh, well, what do we have to do? We've got all sorts of things that we need to get people caught up on. And some of those things is like Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. How we've been ignoring the 14th Amendment in so many different ways. And the progressives, the communists, have completely lied and they've misrepresented the facts for so long that we're literally living in this utopian society. The government, the federal government, is in control of everything. It's not. It was never given that authority and that power. And it's time for us to pull the plug. So what we want you to do is we want you to look at this election as a reality. I told you the Bolshevik Revolution was going to happen. I've been telling you that they've been doing this for years regarding our education system. For at least the past 2 years, I've been pointing to the education system, if not three. I've been pointing to the education system as the mill in producing the useful idiots. I'm really shocked that there are, these adults out there that completely ignore the facts, and they're automatons to the Communist Party. That's what they are, because all they do is repeat the narrative, and they believe these things are good. And so I want you to recognize that, okay, this election is a wake-up call. And there are stages of grief. There's anger, there's denial, and then there's moving on, right? And so what we need you to do is we want you to focus on going through these stages of grief, that we don't want you to go down this path of ending up in apathy and becoming apathetic. Okay, so if anything, you have not done enough. And now what we want you to do is accept the fact that we're dealing with this failure because we have all missed the mark. The mark is enforcing the Constitution and holding these people accountable. It's not some slogan, "Make America Great Again." What does that mean? Well, I can tell you exactly what it means. If you want to make America great once and for all, we have to enforce the Constitution. It's that simple. If we get the Constitution enforced, we get the government living within the boundaries of the Constitution, all of our problems go away. Okay? All right. Well, I'm glad we finally got to that point. So, don't forget, you are a U.S. citizen, and with that citizenship comes responsibilities. Even though you don't, and I'm a huge advocate, and I highly advocate that before a child can get and go register to vote, before anybody can actually register to vote, what they must do is they must take the oath of citizenship. I believe that if we go down that path of having these kids that are becoming voters understand what they are doing, therefore, if they vote for a communist and they support what the communist is doing, then they have failed in their civic duty as a U.S. citizen. Now, along with your U.S. citizenship, you have a responsibility to exercise your civil rights of petitioning government for the redress of grievances, calling for common law grand juries, and do not forget, you are obligated to be engaged in the militia. I like saying this, so please bear with me. As we fight the enemy, remember the enemy is whom you want to acknowledge. I say it's Satan. There's the globalist progressives. There are, people, whoever you deem is the enemy here. Well, I just want you to understand that the only way we are going to successfully beat them is not fighting them on their terms. Their terms is typically going into court and using the legal system. This was never meant to be. As a matter of fact, when Madison and Jefferson stood up against the unconstitutional laws, the Alien Sedition Acts, show me where they went to court. Show me where they sued the government and tried to appeal to the general government. They knew better. This is not the process. What they did was they went down the path of a coalescing the states to get the states to become the tribunal necessary to force the subordinate in this compact to behave according to the compact. This is why Republic Review is really the only process. That's what they were doing. Republic Review is what, and I'll give them credit. Doug Gibbs was the one that helped me come to this, you know, what are you going to call this process? Republic Review. He loved it. Because the first unconstitutional process that the government actually exercised was judicial review. Judicial review is an active action where the court actually reaches down and picks up cases where it wants to actually inject itself, which is unconstitutional. So, with that, I mean, I'll get back into this when we come back after the break. So please stay tuned and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so what does GR mean by going to court is the problem? You have to understand that if you're fighting an issue that the federal government has no enumerated power over, and a good case in point is communications, 5G network, whatever. If there is no enumerated power within the Constitution, so racism, it doesn't matter what the issue is. If it is not an enumerated power, then the federal court system has no jurisdiction. The problem is that the state court systems are, you know, kowtowing completely to the federal courts. It's almost like they've realigned and through their network of courts from D.C., from the SCOTUS down, it's almost like they have perverted and subverted our legal system. So the first thing that has to happen is we have to recognize that the caseload going into federal courts is way out of control. And as a matter of fact, what I suggested is that Trump and Congress, what they need to do is they need to create regional courts to handle the crap that the district courts are mucking up. In other words, homosexual marriage. When that comes up, before it even gets to SCOTUS, the regional court would say, hold it. Where in the Constitution do we have the enumerated power to even review this case? It needs to be remanded and sent back down to the state court. Thank you very much. Everything you said has been nullified. And that's what has to happen. Because the courts only possess authority over those things that they have the enumerated power. This is why the very first thing, the very first process that has to occur before it even goes into court is jurisdiction. This is why in the ratification debates, we point out the federal jurisdiction is limited to the enumerated powers. And Marshall himself said, if they make a law up or if they make a decision or anything that is not within the enumerated powers, the court system will recognize it as null and void. One of the things, before I really get back into the foundation, I just want to start this week off with thanking you for tuning in. I know that you're going into the Thanksgiving week, and I'm hoping that you take the time, get your family, get your friends to tune in on Thanksgiving Day. And actually tune in the day before as well, because on Thanksgiving Day, we will be airing America's first Thanksgiving under our Constitution. Thank you again for tuning in. We just beg and plead that you continue to grow the listenership of this show. In so doing, you are actually educating people, and people are going to start understanding what and why and how we can move forward. You're going to hear that if you don't know who to get involved with, join the NLA. If you don't know what party to vote for, go see the Constitution Party. These things, both of these entities, must be taking a stand on enforcing and holding the Constitution as the supreme law of the land. It's not the law over all things. It's only the law over the enumerated things. And in so doing, as I always say, there's three premises as I operate with. Reasonable people equally informed seldom disagree. The problem is the middle part. Most people aren't equally informed. And so that's not your fault. It's not my fault. It is the fault of, way too much crap out there and way too many editorializing. I get all the time, have you read this book by Glenn Beck? None of these books, they're just editorializing, they're fantasizing. If you want to get really informed, read source books. Alexis de Tocqueville, Democracy in America, Wealth of Nations. Go pick up some standard works, just like Leviathan by Hobbes or Two Treaties of Government by Locke. Read some of these books. They're not that difficult to read. And as you start reading these things, you start understanding, things start kind of coming together for you. Ludwig von Mises' Treatise on Socialism and an Economic Analysis or whatever. These things are great books because they're source documents. They're not opinions on this or that. Anyway, it's time, folks, that we start putting the Constitution over everything we're doing, over the party, over, work, everything that we're doing, we must start focusing. So in our last episode, we were talking about the clauses and these mystical clauses and how they've been used, like the Commerce Clause, in usurping powers. There was never, and as a matter of fact, Madison, in his veto statement of 1813, clearly stated that these clauses are not portals to grant the federal government any new power. So what we have to do, because when you start looking at all the different powers, and as we were just talking about, the communications and all these other things, these are actually state rights. Even though the federal government has created these bureaucracies over the FEC, aviation, and all of these things, these are actually state rights. And so what has to happen is that the federal government, these things need to be dismantled. These things need to be pulled back. And I got to take this aside really quick. I am so thankful the Lord hasn't hit me with a coughing spell. So hopefully I'm not jinxing myself here, because I know I'm getting excited. And usually when that happens, you know, the coughing pursues. But anyway, what I'm trying to tell you is that the states need to take control over these things. We need to start creating commissions. In my very first book, I talked about creating a separate, not a polity, but a commission, if you want to call it a Congress, whatever you want to call it, over each of these matters. And then what you want to do is you don't want to put them all in one place. Creating a centralized government that had so much power, like Washington, D.C., haven't we just realized what a big mistake that is? Haven't we just realized that, you know, the what do you call that? The housing market, the real estate market has never collapsed in D.C.? Well, that's just because it's too important to collapse. Well, as far as I'm concerned, there shouldn't be any personal property, corporate property, housing within the D.C. proper. And as a matter of fact, it should only be sized based on the need. I would love to see the Virginia and Maryland area around D.C. kind of depopulate and convert some of that stuff back to good resources again. But what do we do with communications, the FEC, aviation? Well, okay, so let's just deal with them one at a time. For communications, the FEC, the states need to create a commission, and they need to put that commission, let's just say, Bismarck, North Dakota. Well, why would you do that? Because in so doing, you create an entity that is going to have some funding for it to function and operate. Therefore, you now are pouring in a little bit of money into that particular state to where, you know, that state actually has, you know, some responsibilities of providing infrastructure. But in addition, you know, there's people that are coming and paying for rent or what have you to being able to do business. If you see any seat of government, seats of government usually become little vestiges of money and real estate bubbles and so forth. Well, if you put it all in one huge bubble, then it only helps one area. But if you start spreading these things around, and look at it in a militaristic sense. You know, if you want to target America, just hit D.C. right now, because that's where everything is controlled. But if you start moving these polities, these commissions, where the decisions are being made all over the United States, then we no longer have a single point failure. You can't just target the one. You can target the many that are really important, like this here, that there, you know. And my point with being ambiguous like that is it still makes it difficult for targeting and so forth. And it also helps the local economy and helps stop it. It ends the ignoring of these flyover states, because now they're the fly-to states. If it's energy, you're going to Oklahoma. If it's aviation, you're going to Missouri. You see my point? Transportation, Texas. Every state, if you start looking at all of these unconstitutional powers that the federal government is exercising, then you can realize that moving each of those into a different state, education. Let's say we do want to have state standards and have a state commission. Well, okay, let's put that in Nevada. Not in Las Vegas, but up in Reno. But my point is that in so doing, we're now taking back control, because the people that sit in these commissions, the federal government has no position. They have no bureaucracy. This literally is a state-ran agency where they determine what is best, and they come up with the policies that serves the entire republic instead of allowing the general government to create fulcrums and actually giving advantages to foreign entities and corporations, as we're starting to see that they've been doing all this time. We'll be right back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so it's getting close. I'm starting to get that rattle in the chest, if you know what I mean, regarding this, the pneumonia. Anyway, hopefully I won't have to pause for a cough break. But anyhow, let's just move forward. We've got about 11 minutes to finish this up. As you understand, we're really at that point where the states can easily and need to step in creating these commissions and these controls over all the things that, I mean, do you believe 5G and actually do you believe the cellular corporations would have been able to take advantage and create such harmful devices had the states actually looked into the accountability as these things bubbled up? This is one of the reasons why 5G is at this point it is right now, and how Big Brother is getting itself entrenched into the American society, not just in China. So anyway, as you see, when the states start taking these things back, we can unwind these things and we can actually force these things back into the framework of the Constitution, as well as getting these corporations to either tote the line or they're gone. You know, there's no reason why the government owes these corporations unless they are being tools for the government. So it's like Amazon and Amazon's relationship with the government in giving the CIA all of the data of what you actually perused when you created your Amazon account and what you purchased. All of that, the only reason Amazon was even favored and supported and allowed to exist well beyond its reasonable span of a profitable company was due to the fact that they were providing intelligence to the U.S. government. Well, okay, so this is why I am telling you there's no such thing as a good monopoly, or there's no such thing as a bad monopoly, unless that monopoly is engaged in support and working for government. In other words, if there's government involvement and protections, then we've got a bad monopoly. But if it's like Alcoa with aluminum, go look it up. Alcoa, that was a perfect monopoly that kept prices down. I mean, everything Alcoa was doing was good. And then the government came along and broke it up. We are not better off because they actually broke up Alcoa. Anyway, so now that we have these clauses, and we clearly delineated that not one of those clauses, and we'll go through these as we go through the veto bills and so forth, and as we go through the ratification debates. But I want you to keep in mind that all four of those clauses, right, the necessary and proper clause, the commerce clause, the general defense and welfare clause, as well as the supremacy clause, none of those clauses were portals in allowing the general government to create any new power for itself. They were only clauses that helped the government engage within the enumerated powers. They had no business messing with commerce to the degree that they now dictate what kind of product you can make and so forth. That was never dictated to them. Their regulating of commerce was for the importing and exporting only, to ensure some levels of protection within the states, that one state didn't do, you know, wage any economic warfare, but it was not to design and actually to mandate, you know, what type of light bulb or what type of toilet you could use. Anywho, now there's this one thing that's considered, you know, the elusive, exclusive legislation that is within the Constitution as well. And you find that in Article 1, Section 8, and I want to say it is subsection 17. Let me pull up Section 8. Here we go. Yes, it is subsection 17. To exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square as may, by concession of the particular states and the acceptance of Congress, become the seat of government of the United States. Okay. So what that long statement was, is to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district. In other words, over the seat of government. So if Congress passes an act like the Civil Rights Act, okay, they created this right that you can't, you know, you can't discriminate anybody over these protected demographics. Excuse me. And so what that means is that that act is only applicable to the District of Columbia. If the Civil Rights Act is to be applied to the entire United States, it must be done as an amendment. I want you to know that the first Civil Rights Act that was passed in 1866, and it was vetoed by Andrew Johnson, President Johnson, then what ended up happening was, one, Congress went out and passed a veto-proof bill. In other words, they overpowered with two-thirds of both houses that Civil Rights Act, and that went out. However, the reason that they instantly went to the 14th Amendment, because the Civil Rights Act was very similar, it was kind of a knee-jerk reaction, but the reason they went and instead amended the Constitution with the 14th Amendment was due to the fact that they knew that the Civil Rights Act only was applicable to U.S. territories and the District of Columbia. It was not applicable to the states. The states were sovereign. The only thing that is applicable to the sovereign states are those amendments, enumerated powers within the Constitution. This is why they created the 14th Amendment. But if you look, nowhere in the 14th Amendment did it make any claims of regulating what we see as the 1960, 63 Civil Rights Act. No way. Not even close. The 14th Amendment basically just stated that no states can pass any law that infringes on the privileges and immunities of any U.S. citizen, which at that point in time included the freedmen. So, this exclusive legislation is not some mystical thing that they put in the Constitution to grant all these powers. As a matter of fact, Mason, you know, really aggrandized this whole concept. Oh, they're going to create a cauldron of mischief and do all sorts of evil things. But even still, even Mason, who didn't like the exclusive legislation, even he had to admit that it was only applicable to the seat of government. So here's the real issue on this exclusive legislation, the thing that you need to understand. Exclusive legislation means that in the District of Columbia, if it's to be law, Congress has to write it. There's no amendment to the Constitution that has allowed Congress to actually create, you know, these enumerated powers or anything like that. We have to amend, electoral college, representation, all of those types of things. So right now, if you didn't know, D.C. is a quasi-state because they have kind of admitted these things, but none of them are constitutional. And the fact is that they actually have, they have abdicated their responsibility in maintaining and controlling the District of Columbia by allowing the cesspool of the D.C. mayor, city council, and those things to even exist. They should have, and clearly, based on the Constitution that has been written and the amendments, they are still the ones that should be in control of these all issues and all legislative issues, period. That's why they have exclusive legislation. So then, the next thing that we need to cover, this is another clause that was placed into the Constitution. It's called the Guarantee Clause. Now, most people put the Guarantee Clause into context that the United States guarantees that every state be Republican in form. However, the Guarantee Clause actually provides a much bigger and broader level of protection. And it says this: the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government, and shall protect each of them against invasion. Folks, we've been invaded and invaded and invaded. The invasion began back with FDR. As a matter of fact, not FDR, but Coolidge. And if I remember correctly, it was FDR that created Operation Wetback, where they started, or maybe it was Hoover, started with Hoover. But again, if you look at Hoover, Hoover was a progressive Democrat, even though he had a Republican title next to his name. But Operation Wetback was where they were actually rounding up the Mexicans and sending them back, because at that point in time, they were taking away jobs for Americans. And they were considered demons. But the fact of the matter is, they didn't handle it correctly. The fact of the matter is, folks, that the Constitution guarantees that every state is supposed to be protected from an invasion. Doesn't matter if there's a good point in time for an invasion or not. We're always to be protected from an invasion, period. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we'll have more of this in our next episode. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.